I want to get on with this. You want out? I can find muscle somewhere else. No problem. Okay, I'm in. Hey folks, how you doing? This is Keith Tyler, your volunteer broadcaster here on the Mystery Hour. Thank you for tuning in to Sunshounds of Arizona. This first story is from the Ellery Queen Mystery Magazine. It's about the Ellery Queen Mystery Magazine, written by Peter Lovesey. It's called The Ellery Queen Job. So what's this job we're going to pull? Did I say anything about a job? Duke and Chuck, the go-to guy and the get-in guy, were New York crooks, turned hot and bothered by the sweltering August of 1984, when the super-rich and executives had migrated to the Hamptons, leaving empty properties that cried out to be broken into. If only the owners had forgotten to activate their alarm systems. Tall, thin, and British, Duke, Marmaduke Mason on his police record, sported a straw hat, a black blazer, fraying at the cuffs, a striped shirt, fraying at the collar, gray flannel pants and a black tie with diagonal light blue stripes that he told everyone he was one of the few entitled to wear. Although no New Yorker had ever asked him why. He was the planner. Forever on the lookout for junk mail piling up, suggesting that the owners were away. He read the local papers and knew when people had come into money. Streetwise and sociable, he had numerous contacts in the criminal underworld who believed they were his friends. All he wanted from them was hot information. Once he found a mark, he had no equal at devising ways of parting them from their possessions. Chuck Hooper was the get-in guy. No lock, bolt, or latch had ever beaten him. He had keys of every sort, lock-picking tools, wire cutters, and alarm jammers. Most burglars get in by smashing a window, but Chuck was a professional, one of the old school who liked, if possible, to pick a lock and leave no sign he had got in. The fact that his victims soon discovered they'd been burgled was not the point. He took pride in his work. He was from the Bronx, a short, round guy with a grin he couldn't unfix even for funerals. He dressed in what he found left outside houses, a Giants baseball cap worn backwards, a Mets t-shirt, black chinos, and dusty sneakers with far too many inserts, gores, and extra straps to have been trendy. Ever. How this unlikely duo teamed up is another story. We meet them in Bryant Park in Midtown, eating an alfresco lunch on a metal bench shaded by trees. There was seating for five, but nobody shared with them. On the lawn in front, a group of women in yoga gear had stopped meditating, rolled up their mats, and moved away as soon as the pair arrived. "I feel it in my bones, Duke." "I always thought you were solid flesh. Get this into your head, little man. There's no job I can envisage for you and me. Not today, not tomorrow, not all our tomorrows." The permanent grin became disappointed, then resigned, then admiring. "The way you talk, you should be a writer." "I am." His jaw dropped 2 inches. "No kidding, a book writer?" "There's a lot you don't know about me, my friend. But for once, those bones of yours are uncannily correct. I prefer the term author, but yes, my creative mind will not be thwarted. I once composed a work of literature."
"Give away a poem?"
Duke drew in a rasp of air. "Daffodils and road less travel aren't my bent. I'm more a prose man."
"Your life story?"
"That's the last thing I want to reveal."
"Oh, a novel, then."
"I wouldn't have the time for that."
"Short story?"
"You got it there in the end."
"So," Chuck continued to probe, "what about?"
crime. Uh-huh. He raised a stubby thumb. That figures. You won't know this, Duke said, but the most highly regarded form of crime fiction is the locked room mystery. It has a tradition going back to Edgar Allan Poe, the founding father. I don't suppose you have heard the murders of the Rue Morgue? You're wrong there, Duke. I watched it on TV once. The monkey did it. Duke winced as if he had taken a punch in the gut. Oh, television can't do justice to a story like that. It should be enjoyed from the printed page. It's an intellectual challenge, not something you goggle at. The finest crime writers have exercised their brains devising ingenious locked-room puzzles. Conan Doyle, Dixon Carr, Ellery Queen. And you, Duke. Duke stroked his necktie between fingers and thumbs. Well, if you insist. A locked-room mystery, you called it. Has that sunk in now? Where did you get the idea? And I stole it. Chuck frowned. Is that allowed? Oh, for pity's sake, Chuck, it's crime fiction. We mystery authors all steal from each other. He spoke as loftily as if he was one of the Elmore Leonard's inner circle. Well, you gotta tell me how it was done. Good Lord, no, that would be a spoiler, as we say in the profession. You must wait, like me, for my words to get into print. It's not out yet. Duke sighed and rolled his eyes up the higher floors of the Empire State Building. I have yet to place it.
When will you do that?
When the right publisher comes along. My literary agent may auction it to the highest bidder.
You have an agent?
I am in the process of selecting one.
Chuck thought for a while.
So is this story only in your head, Duke?
Oh, Lord, no. It's on my desk at home. Shall we move on? The sun is going to melt us if we stay much longer.
They ambled out of the park, headed down 42nd for 3 blocks, and turned left on Lexington toward the subway station. Chuck wasn't giving up. He was starting to think this author talk was applesauce, like a lot of other stuff Duke comes out with. Several blocks on, he returned to the topic. So when do I get to
read your short story?
It's way ahead of its time. The world may not be ready for such a bold premise. Chuck smiled to himself.
Too bad.
2 minutes passed in silence, except for the steady drone of traffic, yet neither man changed the subject. Chuck couldn't resist a little mischief.
It's gonna be a surefire bestseller. You can bet your last dollar on that.
Duke modestly spread his hands.
Is it a murder?
Duke sighed. You'll keep on until I tell you. If you must know, it is, and the victim is killed with a highly original weapon.
Okay, let me guess. An icicle in the heart.
Duke came to such a sudden halt that several office workers had to step off the sidewalk to avoid bumping into him.
How do you know that? Did you break into my apartment?
Would I do that to my buddy? No way. The author had turned whiter than Hamlet's father.
Then how on earth?
I was in the mystery writing business myself.
You? No kidding. Shall we move on?
You see that brown office tower building up ahead there, 380 Lex, where I worked?
Ellery Queen, the world's leading mystery magazine.
Oh, get away. The editor was real nice. She would open the mail in the morning and say, too bad, another icicle in the hot story. Which was pure invention, but Chuck was starting to enjoy himself. Sometimes it's a dagger made of ice, and sometimes it's a bullet.
Duke had the bruised look of an unseated show jumper.
And the Ellery Queen people employed you?
Chuck was too soft-hearted to inflict more pain.
Well, no, I wasn't on the payroll, if that's what you're asking me. I was MC at the time. The Ellery Queen office was part of our franchise.
Oh, I see.
But Duke didn't see. He didn't humble himself by asking, what in the name of sanity MC was. He ran the letters through his mental calculator and got nothing.
So you weren't in the fixture of the Ellery Queen suite?
I was there each morning. And now Duke's brain supplied a believable explanation.
Ah, with the refreshment trolley. Manhattan Catering.
No, Midtown Catering.
Huh, you were the office cleaner.
Unlike his companion, Duke was not soft-hearted. His injured pride turned savagely to scorn.
A mop artist, a freaking scrubber, that's much I can believe. Why didn't you say so in the first place? I thought all the hoovering was done out of office hours.
Well, yeah, I started at 5:30 doing three other suites along the corridor, and Ellery Queen was the last, and sometimes the editor arrived early and told me to finish up while she opened the mail. They had this policy of reading everything that came in, and there was always new stories from wannabe writers. Did you send your story there?
Well, I don't remember, Duke lied.
If I did, I don't suppose they could afford my asking price. If it was the icicle story, they wouldn't have used it, Chuck said, with the authority of an insider. That trick is over 100 years old.
How do you know that?
Well, the editor said so.
You were supposed to be sweeping the floor, not eavesdropping.
Well, it's not like it's a top secret. Duke was incensed.
You're a bull slinger, Chuck Hooper. You led me to believe you were editorial, not a common skivvy.
Hey, we all gotta live, Duke. Matter of fact, they treated me like one of the team. Some books I cleaned were so precious I had to wear polyethylene gloves and use a feather duster. I picked them off the shelf one by one and blew on them and stroked them with the feathers. I wasn't allowed to shake them or slam them shut because it would damage the spines. They told me that wasn't cleaning, it was curating. I came in special on the first Saturday of the month and got time and a half.
What books were these?
Oh, well, it was a complete run of Ellery Queen's going back to 1941. A bunch of bound volumes with hundreds of loose ones as well. After 80 years, the early ones smelt like a gorilla's armpit. I suggested spraying them with deodorant, and the editor was horrified.
Some of those critters from the 1940s, in good condition, they go for big bucks. These were on open shelves.
They had stopped at an intersection. Duke was so deep in thought that he forgot to walk when the sign lit up. Someone shoved him in the back. Well, no, behind glass, Chuck answered the question after they had both crossed. The cabinet was kept locked, but I always knew where to find the key. Saturdays I had the place to myself.
They trusted you with these rare magazines.
I told you, Duke, it was my curating day.
Did you lift any?
Every one of them.
To blow off the dust. It was a morning's work. No, I mean lift, as in purloin.
Chuck said in a shocked tone,
"No chance. They'd know right away who nicked them. I could have lost my job."
"Lost your job and gained big bucks. I am not a book guy, Duke. I wouldn't know where to unload old magazines."
"You could have asked me. How many were there?"
"Well, I don't know. Too many to count. The latest wouldn't be worth too much, you know."
"A complete run would. I don't suppose anyone outside their office has a complete run. Some collector would give an arm and a leg for all the Ellery Queens ever printed."
They reached the subway entrance before any more was said. This was the station Chuck used because it was a cinch for fare dodging.
"See you in the park tomorrow," he said. "Not tomorrow or the next day," Duke said, and added mysteriously, "My diary is full. Thursday I can manage at a pinch."
A smartly dressed woman was fanning herself with Harper's Magazine on their usual bench on Thursday lunchtime. When Chuck got out his Burger King fried onion rings, she looked at her watch, said,
"Is it as late as that?" and moved off sharply.
He was joined shortly after by Duke with a roast beef on rye he couldn't open because the plastic packaging was too tough. "You want me to try?" Duke handed it over and winced when Chuck put it in his mouth and peeled it open with his teeth. "Hey, there's a way into everything." After they'd eaten, Duke picked up their earlier conversation as if 2 days hadn't passed since they last spoke. "And this cabinet with the Ellery Queen, is it made of wood?"
Chuck nodded.
He wasn't sure he wanted this conversation.
"And you said you know where the key is."
"Well, 2 years ago I did.
It may not be there anymore."
"Where was it kept when you were cleaning?"
"Curating."
"Blowing off the dust?"
Top left side."
"The top of the cupboard? How tall is it?"
"Well, taller than me or you. I had to reach up and feel for it."
Chuck tried once more to sow some seeds of caution.
"Well, they may not keep it there now."
"Oh, they will. Old habits die hard."
"Why do you want to know, Duke?"
"I have been making some inquiries. I found a collector in Arizona who will pay cash for the set, no questions asked."
"The set? He wants them all."
"That's how it is with serious collectors. They're obsessive. They want to own everything."
"If we clear out the cabinet, it's going to be obvious."
"Well, inevitably."
"It's a lot of magazines."
"My man is willing to pay $20 for each. Even the most recent ones that retail at $175.
He's nuts."
"All collectors are nuts."
"How much is that?"
"Depends on how many there are."
Duke pulled a copy of the magazine from his blazer pocket.
"The latest issue, liberated this very morning from the magazine kiosk at Grand Central. They should tell us at the back."
He turned it over and found the indicia on the final page.
"Neat. This happens to be number 496.
Chuck wasn't slow in calculating illegal profits.
"Call it 500. At 20 each,
that's 10 grand.
He whistled.
"Minus expenses," Duke said. "We need wheels to shift them and a reliable driver."
There was a pause while Chuck took in the seriousness of what was being proposed.
"You think this is on?"
"Are you persuaded?"
He had been desperate for work, and now he was conflicted. He scratched his chin.
"It's high risk for me. My name is going to come up as someone who knew where the key is kept."
"The cleaner from 2 years ago? No chance. How long did you work there?"
"A couple of months."
"Did they even know your name?"
Chuck shook his head. "I was on parole at the time. Kept calling myself Chip.
You can't be too careful, but people remember my face." "Don't kid yourself. I would say it's eminently forgettable. Put a stocking over it if you want. This is a doozy, Chuck. No cop is going to look twice at a couple of guys loading a car trunk with a pile of old pulp magazines."
"What's my cut?"
50-50 as always. Are you in?"
"Can I think it over?"
"No."
"No?
I want to get on with this. If you want out, I can find muscle somewhere else. No problem."
"Okay, I'm in."
Duke was a master of strategy. He drew up a list of requirements, notably a hand truck, rubber gloves, and 7 easy-assemble archive boxes that came in flat packs. He'd measured the magazines and estimated that each box would hold 80 copies. There wouldn't be vast expense involved because they could hire a truck for the weekend along with brown coats that would make them look like porters and get them past the desk in the lobby. They would use a driver they both knew well, Shifty Smith, who stayed calm in situations of stress as long as no one called him Shifty. Before dawn, on the Saturday morning, he would pick up their transport from the long-term parking lot at LaGuardia. Chuck was handed some cash and deputed to buy the archive boxes from a stationery store in Queens.
"Oh, and get 2 bottles of water."
"I don't drink water out of bottles."
Duke.
I didn't say you did. Two large ones, still not sparkling.
Before investing in any more cash, Duke decided on a bold but necessary move. He would visit the Ellery Queen suite during office hours for interior surveillance, as he put it.
Chuck was unhappy with that and said so.
You said yourself it may not still be there, Duke explained. We could be wasting our time.
You said old habits die hard.
This is for real now. There's another saying about wise and foolish virgins.
Chuck didn't know anything of the saying. He wasn't a virgin, and he doubted whether Duke was.
You don't expect me to join you.
No, I can manage the surveillance alone. Where exactly is the cupboard?
Behind the editor's desk.
Simple, then. I'll call in this afternoon with my copy of the magazine. There are four pages of classified ads in the back. Business opportunities, loans, money-making, ventures, lonely hearts. I can say I'm thinking of placing an advertisement.
When they met next lunchtime, Duke was looking grave, even more grave than usual.
We have encountered a problem.
Chuck took the news lightly. Secretly, he still wasn't persuaded that this heist was a good idea.
Uh-huh.
I found the office. I didn't meet the editor, but she has a charming assistant called Cindy, who told me all we need to know.
So what's the problem?
There is no cupboard behind the editor's desk.
Get away! This was a slap in the face for Chuck, casting serious doubt on his story that he'd worked at Ellery Queen office at all.
No cabinet at all? It must have been moved.
If it ever existed, it's gone.
You gotta believe me, Duke. It was there when I last cleaned the place.
Well, that's immaterial.
Somebody must have pointed out the security risk. The precious collection is now kept elsewhere.
Did she say where? No, but I worked it out. A storeroom.
Chuck snapped his fingers. There was a storeroom at the back. I was never asked to clean inside. God knows what they keep in there.
God knows, and so do I,
Duke said like an Old Testament prophet.
I asked Cindy if she could tell me how much they charge for small ads. She isn't the advertising manager, so she didn't have the figure in her head. She had to collect a recent issue from the storeroom. She left the door open, and I followed her in and saw what was inside. Boxes and boxes of spare copies, as well as stationery and their coats. Oh, and a heavy-duty steel cupboard like a safe that is kept locked.
With the boodle inside, obviously.
Where do they keep the key? There is no key. It's a combination lock.
Are you sure?
I saw the dial. I have 20/20 vision.
Of course he had 20/20 vision. Everything about Duke was top of the range. Chuck made a show of disappointment.
Well, this time was stymied. Duke, I can open anything that needs a key. Combinations are a different ball game.
With all your expertise, surely not.
Chuck shook his head. Already he felt a comforting sense of relief.
Out of my league. Face it, this heist is a dead duck.
Duke asked,
Did you already buy the archive boxes?
Sure, but they're returnable. I can take 'em back.
Don't. We're still going to need them.
We are?
Look at it like this.
It's a challenge. You and I have our own locked room puzzle to solve.
Like I said, I can get us into the storeroom, no problem, Chuck said.
The combination on the safe, it's something else.
And I have the perfect solution.
Chuck thought hard. Extremely hard.
Lift the safe?
Duke rolled his eyes.
You haven't seen the size of it. We would need a special hoist and a dolly. Besides, we'd never get past the doorman wheeling out a safe, even wearing brown coats.
Chuck was kept waiting to hear the perfect solution while Duke took another bite of his roast beef sandwich, chewed methodically, swallowed, and helped it down with iced tea. He took out a white cotton handkerchief and wiped his lips. The answer is so simple, it's beautiful. We bring the editor with us on Saturday. She'll get us past the doorman in the lobby, and she'll have the keys to the office and the storeroom, and she will know the combination as well.
Chuck wasn't following this.
Bring her with us? You don't know how much it irks me when you repeat the things I say. But she's playing for the other side, Duke. So we persuade her to play for us. Saturday's a day off. She's out of it.
Not if we insist.
Chuck had turned ashen. We don't do violence.
Who said anything about violence? I'm talking about persuasion. The fair sex relate to me, and I relate to them. I can't count the number of relationships I've had in my time. Some tell me it's the English accent, but I put it down to my good looks and personal charm.
You think she will play ball if you speak nice to her?
She could lose her job over this, which is why we have a plan B.
What's that?
My Smith and Wesson automatic.
Oh, peace!
Chuck's voice shrilled in horror.
You can't be serious. That's armed robbery. It's the best persuader I know. I have no intention of firing the thing.
Armed robbery for a bunch of old magazines, Chuck said. I'm out. I want no part of this.
Sorry, old chum, Duke said without an atom of sorrow in his voice. You bought the archive boxes. You're already an accessory. You might as well come for the ride. And that's all it will be, except for some portering. Thanks to my smart thinking, your lockpicking is now surplus to requirements.
Chuck didn't get much sleep Friday night. For one thing, he was having panic attacks, and for another, the weather broke and rattled the windows. For more than an inch of rain was dumped on New York City. It was still bucketing down at 6 a.m. Saturday when a silver BMW with darkened windows came to a smooth halt outside his apartment building in Queens. Shift Smith had borrowed a beauty. The rear window was lowered just enough for Duke to say, "You'll have to load the trunk yourself." Chuck had everything ready in the hallway in black plastic sacks. He managed to load in two quick journeys and still got drenched. His main concern was whether the wet stocking over his head would reveal more than he intended. Mercifully, the only available seat was next to Shift, so he was unlikely. Presumably, all the protesting had happened already. She was a Mustang, freshly broken in and passive. The BMW cruised as sedately as any well-sprung vehicle could through the flooded, badly made-up roads. Soon they passed the toll booth of the Midtown Tunnel, and Chuck's spirits improved a little. Nothing can beat the thrill of a heist, and this was easy-peasy compared to some he had been on. With Ed the editor for company, they would have no trouble getting past the front desk and through all the office doors, including the all-important one on the safe. Above the sound of the rain hitting the car roof, he heard a rustling behind him. He still faced front. A guardsman on duty couldn't have acted with more self-control. A piece of paper appeared from over the headrest. "Fold this and put it in your pocket," Duke instructed him. "What is it, Duke?"
It wasn't a $100 bill, for sure. It was some sort of typed document. He didn't trust his partner in crime.
This could be the proof on paper that his cut of the operation had been reduced. He wasn't going to wait until the job was done and then read it.
Fortunately, he had a small flashlight attached to his belt, along with the lockpicking tools he called his manicure set.
Duke said, "When I was in the Ellery Queen storeroom the other day, I picked up a sheet of their headed notepaper. You'll have to forgive me, Ed. Opportunity seldom knocks twice.
Read it by all means, Chuck. It's your bona fides.
Chuck didn't understand foreign expressions and didn't like the sound of bona fide one bit. He turned the light on the paper.
To whom it may concern, the bearer of this note is an employee of the Manhattan Retirement Homes, Inc., and has our authority to collect a charitable donation of 500 back issues of Ellery Queen Mystery Magazine from the office above named J.J. Jones, Administrative Manager.
Okay. His office pass. Why had he ever doubted? Typically, Duke had left nothing to chance. Chuck pocketed the note as instructed and felt confidence come surging back, confidence in Duke and in the job. They were already on Lexington. The rain had stopped beating on the roof and was replaced by the hiss of car tires on the wet street. Being so early on a Saturday, Shift found a spot right in front of 380.
"You can take off that stupid stocking now," Duke said. "Ed has more on her mind than you. Where are the brown coats?"
"In the trunk."
"Jump to it, feller. Put yours on. You have work to do. We want everything out. Coats, trucks, boxes. Ed and I will go in first. You can take the next elevator to the 14th floor. We'll tell reception you are following. They may not even ask to see your pass."
"You said the everything. Does that include the water?"
"Oh, especially the water."
Out in the street, New York streamed with water. It smelt unusually fresh after a rain. Chuck pulled the brown coat over his rain jacket. He took the hand truck from its sack and loaded everything on it. By the time that was done, the others were out of sight. When he trundled his load across the marble floor of the lobby, the man on reception saw him coming and waved him through. As the elevator rose, his spirits rose, too. "This Ellery Queen job is a class heist, Chuck Hooper. For a small amount of portering, you are about to earn the best part of $5,000. What can possibly go wrong?" When he stepped into the corridor, he heard Duke's voice from an open door, as lordly as ever.
"Is that you, Chuck?"
"Who else?" Chuck said.
"Come on in. Ed and I are in the storeroom already. That's 2 locks out of 3, not bad, eh? And she's in the process of putting in the magic numbers for the safe."
He put his head around the storeroom door.
"You know the drill. Make up the boxes as quickly as you can. Then bring one in here and we can start filling up."
He cupped his mouth and said,
"It's a cakewalk. I haven't shown her the gun once."
"Thank God for that," Chuck said. He soon had the knack of assembling the boxes. A 9-year-old could have done it. He was happy to work out here, out of Ed's sight. She was a smart lady, and he was still afraid she would recognize him, even though she knew him as Chip and not Chuck. Presently he heard the metallic groan of the safe door opening, music to his ears. Duke's voice, usually devoid of any emotion, cried out,
"Bingo!"
Chuck waited, dry-mouthed. There was still the possibility that the magazines weren't inside. When he heard Duke say,
"Ed, I congratulate you. What a vast amount of editing these represent."
And for the first time that morning, he heard and recognized the editor's voice, sounding remarkably calm in the circumstances.
"They're not all my work. Fred Danay was editor-in-chief for over 40 years. He was the original Ellery Queen, along with Manfred B. Lee. I'm a recent appointment." "Big shoes to fill?"
"Tell me all about it."
12 issues a year is quite some undertaking."
13, in fact. We produce 2 in December. We work about 6 months ahead of publication. Only this week we put the 500th issue to bed."
"A special, obviously."
"Oh, too true. We worked our socks off."
500. What an amazing landmark.
When will I be able to buy a copy?"
"It will be on the bookstands before Christmas."
"I can't wait.
but my colleague should be here any second with the first archive box. Your work is done, my dear. Ours is just beginning."
Chuck was so surprised by the friendliness of the chat that he almost missed his cue. Yes, sir, he was ready to go, except for his face covering. He dragged the stocking over his head so quickly that he almost suffocated trying to locate the slits. Then he took the box in and started the task of emptying the safe, the oldest bound issues first. When three boxes were filled, he loaded them on the hand truck and wheeled them to the elevator, remembering to wipe off the stocking mask before leaving the office. Downstairs, Shift Smith was outside the BMW smoking. He opened the door, leaned over the dash, and operated the switch that opened the trunk. He was a man of few words. Large BMWs have ample space for luggage. Chuck unloaded and returned upstairs, getting a friendly nod from the guy at the front desk. Before entering the storeroom, he paused to listen to another snatch of conversation. Duke using his charm on the lady, and this time the topic was the magazine's selection policy. The nerve of the guy! Every sort of story, as long as it's a mystery. Yes, we are guided by our readers, and our consumer research tells us that they like a wide range, from cozy to hard-boiled, Ed told him. Locked room mysteries? Oh, they've always been popular. I dare say you get some plots that have been, well, tried before. Oh, for sure, and sadly they can be well-written, but too familiar to use. I've got some thoughts I should try. Got any tips? The guy had more front than the New York Public Library. Outside in the main office, Chuck sighed and shook his head. The original. I know it's difficult, but that's what we look for.
Right. If I ever submit anything, I'll bear that in mind. I'm wondering where my assistant is. He's taking his time.
More delay wouldn't do. Chuck tugged on his mask and wheeled the truck inside. Duke had filled the next three boxes himself and put the lids on.
What were you doing, Lazy Bones, having a smoke with the driver? Take these down and wait in the car. I'll bring the last box myself. There are just these few loose copies left.
Pleased to quit the crime scene, Chuck pulled the stocking off his head and wheeled his last load along the deserted corridor, except it wasn't deserted. Never take anything on spec. All of life is 6-5 against.
Hey, fella!
A tone of authority he heard 1,000 times before on prison landings. His blood ran cold. What should he do? Pretend he was deaf? Make a dash. The elevator was sure to be in use. He turned his head and managed a feeble,
"Hi."
No argument. Blue shirt with security written across the front. A walkie-talkie attached to the left shoulder, big leather belt bristling with pepper spray, baton, and handcuffs. By some quirk of genealogy or immigration, the name tag sewn on the shirt was from J. Stalin.
"Where you going with that?"
J. Stalin demanded. He had the mustache and the eyes and the infamous Uncle Joe, but not the hair. He was all of 6'4" with the physique of a quarterback.
Down to the street, Chuck said, and added respectfully, "Officer?"
"What's in them boxes?"
"Old magazines."
"Yeah?"
"Yeah."
"Show me."
Chuck stood the truck upright and lifted the lid off the top box. J. Stalin reached inside and picked one out. Chuck's bad luck had turned worse. The picture on the front showed a security guard's cap lying in a pool of blood.
"You read this crap?"
"Nope, I'm just only the porter. Want to see my bona fide?"
"Wait." J. Stalin thumbed through the pages while Chuck's entire prison record streamed through his brain.
Something to pass the time, I guess.
This guy had more pockets in his pants than he could possibly need. He was feeling for one large enough to take the magazine.
You can't keep it, Chuck said in alarm. They're part of a collection. If no one... No, it's no use if one is missing.
Who says?
I'm telling you. In desperation, he straightened to his full 5 feet, 3 and a half. You could lose your job. It sounded awfully like a threat. So he added,
That's an old copy you're holding. You can buy the latest at the magazine kiosk at Grand Central for only $175.
Jay Stalin chucked the magazine back into the box. On your way, Busta. Chuck thanked his lucky star, replaced the lid, and trundled the boxes to the elevator, which stood open. He heaved about 20 relieved sighs before reaching ground level. Shift Smith was on his 5th cigarette. Chuck loaded the boxes into the trunk and pushed them hard against the others to make space for the hand truck.
Can I get in?
Shift gave a shrug. Chuck's legs were shaking. Jay Stalin had been a shock to his system. He made himself even rounder and smaller than he was. Then he heard the trunk lid lifting and the thump of the final box of magazines. Duke got in behind him and told Shift to drive off.
"Where's Ed?" Chuck asked.
"She's remaining," Duke said.
"Doesn't she want a lift home?"
"No."
Chuck pondered the matter.
"Isn't there a danger she'll call the cops?"
"There's no phone where she is now."
"Where's that?"
"The storeroom."
"What's she doing in there?" "When I left, she was wasting her energy hammering on the door," Duke said impassively. "No one will hear."
"You locked her in?"
"After first relieving her of her keys." The full implication got home to Chuck. "She'll be stuck in there all weekend until Monday when her workmates arrive. We never discussed this, Duke."
"It didn't come up in the planning. What happens in the days after a heist never does. It's not exciting, so it gets ignored. You and I, and Shift,
need to cover our tracks, and our editor friend will have time to think about all the rejections she sends out."
"This is personal, isn't it? You're punching her because she didn't use your story."
"Careful what you say, Chuck. That's verging on libel."
"There are no windows. She's got no food or drink."
"Correction, she has 2 large bottles of water. Anyone can survive a couple of days if they have supply of water. I warned her not to drink it all at once."
It finally dawned on Chuck why he'd been told to bring the water. Imprisoning Ed had been part of the plan from the start. Duke wasn't troubled by the inhumanity of what he'd done, so Chuck switched to an argument that would get home to him.
"If we get done for this, they'll throw the book at us. Kidnapping is a federal crime. You're not looking at a few months inside. It's 20 years.
"All the more reason to delay the hue and cry," Duke said. "By Monday she'll be so pleased to be rescued that she may not do anything about it. Personally, I'm getting out of New York, and I advise you to do the same."
Chuck's eyes opened wide.
"Where are you going?"
"I was sent a plane ticket to Arizona. By noon on Sunday, I'll be in Phoenix."
Back in his one-room apartment in Queens, Chuck couldn't get Ed out of his mind. He hated thinking her locked in that pokey storeroom for 48 hours, even if she came to no long-term harm. True, there was a light switch, but there was no fresh air and no place to lie down among the stacks of stationery and magazines. No bathroom arrangement, of course. All his dealings with her in the MC days had been friendly and civilized. She'd talked to him as an equal and offered him coffee. He knew it would be useless trying to persuade Duke to let her free. For him, it was mission accomplished. There was no chance he would relent. He would deny that he bore a grudge toward Ed for rejecting the icicle in the heart story. Chuck was tempted to return to the office right away, pick the lock, and release her. An act of self-sacrifice, because she would surely finger him for the heist.
If he were acting alone, he'd take that chance. But this had been a team job. The police would right away be on the phone to the airport to arrest Duke and recover the boodle when he turned up for his flight tomorrow. Likely, they'd drop the net on Shift Smith as well. Chuck Hooper, the Fink who ratted on his buddies, well, no one would ever work with him again. Duke would make sure of that. He paced the small room in search of a solution. He needed somehow to persuade Duke that releasing Ed was essential, and it had to be today. Already it was almost noon. After much agonizing, he had a brighter idea. He picked up the phone, hoping to God that Duke hadn't gone out. He hadn't. "Aye, it's me." The voice wasn't friendly. "What the heck? I'm too darned busy to talk to you. I've got 1,000 things to do before tomorrow." "We have a problem, Duke. I went out for coffee in a Danish and bumped into a woman I worked with when I cleaned at Ellery Queen. Her name is Cindy, but that doesn't matter." It did, of course. Clever stuff. He could almost hear Duke's brain making the connection. "I know, Cindy." "Right on. You told me you did. I had to think twice who she was. She looks different out of the office in a shorts and a Rolling Stones t-shirt." "Get to the point, man. I don't need to know what she was wearing." "Well, she talked about the office. That's all we have in common. She said she'd had a heavy week getting a special issue of the magazine ready for the printer. She was real pleased they'd put it to bed." "You're not telling me anything I don't know already." "Yeah," Chuck thought. "I overheard the conversation, but you don't know the next bit, wise guy, because I made it up. She told me they all worked so hard that they were taken next week off from work to recover." Duke didn't have to speak. His gasp traveled down the line like a steam train. "Hear what I say?" Chuck said. "The office is closed until a week on Monday. Ed won't survive that long without food and drink. This started out as a little larceny, but it became armed robbery and kidnap, and now it's gonna be murder." "Quiet down a minute," Duke said, still breathing hard and deep. "Let me think. There's got to be a way through this." "It's obvious," Chuck said. "I can go back and let her out. She didn't see me through the mask. She'll think I'm Chip the cleaner." "Reporting for work after 2 years? That's daft." "I could still be the cleaner for some other offices. I know where all the cleaning stuff is stored. I'll wear the overalls and have a mop and bucket with me. There are keys to all the offices hanging on the wall." "Well, it might work, I suppose," Duke said grudgingly. "I can say I heard sounds through the wall and looked in to check." "By picking the lock? That's too suspicious. I've got the storeroom key here. I wasn't going to leave it in the lock." "Shall I come to your place and collect it?" "No." Duke's private life was guarded like Fort Knox. "I'll meet you in the lobby at 380 Lexington. How soon can you get there?" Chuck smiled. He'd seen this coming. Duke was a control freak. He couldn't bear to stay away. He'd said he'd had 1,000 things to do. Now he had 1,001. They met as planned. The guy behind the desk had seen them before and allowed them into the elevator. No one else got into the car, so they were able to talk. "What should I do with her when she's freed?" Chuck asked. "Any suggestions?" Duke had thought it through already. "Distract her. She'll want to freshen up, and she'll want to tell you all about the ordeal she's been through. Take her for a drink and a bite to eat, and be sympathetic. If she mentions the word police, tell her they will fall about laughing if she says she wants to report the theft of some old magazines. As for a kidnap plot, they came to nothing. She might as well save her breath." "You think she'll take that from me?"
Well, why not? You will have rescued her from starvation. Anything you say is gospel, man.
Where's this cleaner's room you told me about?
Up the corridor from Ellery Queen's office.
Will anyone be there?
They shouldn't. I always had to be on myself on Saturday.
I won't come in with you. I'm going to make myself scarce and observe from a distance.
You'll need this. He handed over the storeroom key.
I could slide it under the door and run, Chuck said.
No, do as I said. We want her escorted out of the building. You can leave the mop and bucket and your overalls in the office. You look nervous. Brace up, man. She won't eat you. She's not that hungry.
Chuck tried to brace up. He stepped out of the elevator and headed for the cleaner's room. Nobody was there, as he predicted. He got into his cleaning gear, remembering to put on polyethylene gloves, picked the office key off the hook, and stepped out into the corridor. Dressed for the part, he felt more confident. He let himself into the Ellery Queen office, put down the mop and bucket, and took out the key to the storeroom.
It's okay, he said softly as he turned it in the lock. It's only me, Chip the cleaner.
Then he had the shock of his life.
She wasn't in there.
He heard someone come in behind him. He spun around, expecting Duke. Instead, he was facing the massive figure of J. Stalin, baton in one hand, pepper spray in the other.
What's going on?
That's what I was about to ask, Chuck said.
You better tell it to my boss, J. Stalin said. We're on a security alert.
I work here. I'm the cleaner.
You are the porter. I saw you earlier.
Handyman, then.
To the elevator. Move!
Chuck moved. Security had a couple of rooms in the lobby. As soon as Chuck entered the inner room, where they interviewed suspects, he saw a bear with a foot in a trap. It was Duke, seated and cuffed. They must have picked him up as soon as he left the elevator upstairs.
You two know each other, J. Stalin asked.
He's a stranger to me, Chuck said.
No comment, Duke said.
Another beefy security guard handcuffed Chuck and shoved him into a chair across the room from Duke.
What happens next? Chuck asked.
You shut up and wait, J. Stalin said.
20 minutes passed before the head honcho appeared, accompanied by Ed, the editor, free as a bird and happy as a lottery winner.
Do you recognize these men, ma'am?
I do. That's Duke on the left, and the other one is Chip.
They were caught about an hour ago acting suspiciously in the vicinity of your office.
Together?
Well, they used the elevator together. After your distressing experience earlier this morning, we had them under surveillance from the moment they got out at floor 14.
Acting suspiciously, you said? In what way?
The main interrogator turned to J. Stalin, who said,
I found the little guy outside the storeroom where you were detained, ma'am.
Ed gave Chip a warm smile.
Well, that's understandable. He does curation work. In there for on Saturdays cleaning our collection of rare magazines?
Chip said,
You saw me earlier, Officer Stalin, and I allowed you to handle one of them.
J. Stalin said, Shut up. His chief said,
Is that a fact, Joe?
Well, yeah, but you better uncuff this gentleman at once and apologize for your mistake.
How about the other guy, ma'am?
Ed hesitated.
I don't know him quite so well, but he could be one of my authors.
Duke's face lit up like a birthday cake. Each of the three had an escape to be thankful for. They celebrated with a late lunch in the Grand Central Oyster Bar.
Oh, be under no illusions, Ed told her kidnappers. I can still hand you over to the police. Those magazines, every one of them,
must be returned to the safe by Monday morning in the right sequence and free of dust. You can also buy me dinner at the Waldorf Astoria next Saturday night.
You're wrong, Chuck said, and Duke raised his thumb.
I appreciate the effort to release me, unnecessary as it turned out.
And how did you get out? Duke asked. That's really bugging me.
A locked room mystery, she said with a smile. When you locked me in, I expected you heard me beating my fists on the door and shouting to you to let me out.
The whole of New York heard you, ma'am.
In reality, I knew what I was doing. I had my foot hard against the bottom of the storeroom door. You couldn't have pushed it open even if you had tried. I'm pretty strong, and I was wearing my jogging sneakers with thick rubber soles. You locked it. I heard the bolt engaged. I went quiet for about 10 seconds, then slowly turned the door handle as if I was coming out. This must have spooked you because you turned the key again. In fact, you unlocked it. I left my foot against the door and started hollering again. As soon as you removed the key and left the office, I opened the door and stepped out.
Simple as that.
The best locked room puzzles are the simple ones. It's so neat. I'm surprised no one has used it in a story. I haven't even seen it in print. All I need is an author willing to write it.
Really? Duke said. I'm known as the go-go guy.
Well, folks, that's going to do it for this episode of the Mystery Hour. This story came from the 1,000th issue of the Ellery Queen Mystery Magazine, and I found it pretty appropriate to start off the new year with a new record. Thanks for joining me. Tune in again next time, will you please? I'm Keith Tyler saying, make sure your I love yous are in order. Thanks. So long.